This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Matt Spiegel, and we are off and running with Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. Hear guests like Joe Davis explain the thought process during baseball's biggest games.
You got to widen the lens. What does this home run mean?
Incredible broadcasters sharing great stories from your favorite teams with new episodes weekly. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.
And then away we go. Hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Someone that knows John Calipari really well, Josh Pastner, the former coach at Georgia Tech and Memphis. He's going to stop by an hour from now, so we'll catch up with Josh once again 60 minutes from now. You can always follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Zach Gelb. The two biggest stories right now in the world are the eclipse. Is that just going on for the last 2 hours and then it ends? Is this how this works, Samter? Because a lot of people today were like, oh, you probably won't be able to see it because you're going to be in the office here at 345 Hudson Street. And I guess by the time that we get out, even though the sun is still up and it hasn't set yet at 6 p.m. Eastern, I guess what everyone is seeing right now and wearing these fancy schmancy glasses so their eyesight doesn't get ruined and you're not like Odell Beckham Jr. from that gif from years ago where he was looking right at the sun, I guess that we will miss this and the ship will sail from our personal viewing of this. Is that the correct information there, Samther?
Yes.
Okay. So just 2 hours pretty much right there. So are you disappointed by that? Just wondering.
Yeah, I kind of would have liked to have seen the eclipse. I remember the last time I was in Chicago, I had the glasses on and I looked like an idiot, but it was still kind of cool to see.
I don't know. I have no desire to see this. Like, my mother called me earlier this morning. She's like, did you get your glasses? I don't want your vision to be ruined. Like, are you going to go outside and watch this? I was like, absolutely not. I've seen enough pictures of it right now. I see everyone posting their selfies, going outside and looking up at the sun. And then you get the real tough guys and gals that are like, oh, screw these glasses. I'm going to look right at the sun. I've never cared less about something that people cared more about than the solar eclipse. No interest whatsoever. Stu, I guess you could break the tie here. Samter is very upset that they didn't give him an off day today and he wasn't able to join everyone else in the streets of New York City right now and look right up at the sky. I don't give a rat's ass. Where do you lie on this one?
I am with you. I really don't care, to be honest with you. I will see videos on social media later, I'm sure. That's enough for me. I don't need to see it.
And then you have, obviously, the big sports news, and that's John Calipari leaving Kentucky to go to Arkansas. And the first video has emerged of John Calipari. And John Calipari was walking around the neighborhood, and he was walking his dog, actually. And the dog was in a stroller, which is really lame. Unless the dog has a condition where the dog can't physically walk, and maybe it's an older dog, okay, you have to walk your dog, and you want your dog to get outside, so then maybe you have to put the dog in a carriage. I understand that, but then I saw that there was a video when he was getting hounded by the reporters where it started off the first 30 seconds, I guess the dog was in the carriage, I guess is what we'll call it, or the stroller. And then as that did go on, you did get to see the dog actually walking. But that to me, unless there is a physical issue with the dog, as someone that used to be a dog owner, and unfortunately my dog passed away a few years ago after living like 17 or 18 years, which is an incredible run for a dog, I would never envision getting a stroller to walk my dog. That's how you know you're rich, all right? That's how you know John Calipari is just sitting on bags and bags and bags of millions and millions and millions of dollars. You have a stroller for your dog? That's what we're doing right now? I don't think Stu has a dog, but I know Samter has a dog. Samter, please tell me your cute dog. You aren't one of these bougie snobs that has a stroller to walk your dog. You don't put your dog in a stroller, right?
No. I have very strong opinions about this. No dogs in strollers and no kids on leashes, right? You see some of those kids with those backpacks with a little string that comes out and parents walking them around like a dog on a leash. The only exception for a dog in a stroller is if it's a really old dog who can't walk. Outside of that, there is zero excuse to ever have your dog in a stroller. It's either laziness or just not understanding how dogs work or just being too froofy and stupid. But never put your dog in a stroller as long as the dog is able to walk. Even if the dog doesn't want to walk, get that damn dog to walk. Do not put it into a stroller.
And here's the other thing. If you do cave, because I agree with you, if the dog physically can't walk, okay, then the dog needs a stroller to get fresh air. Totally understand that. But if you cater and coddle your dog to, okay, dad's trying to walk the dog. Coach Calipari's trying to walk the dog, but the dog is refusing to walk because it's like sniffing some grass or something like that. The moment you put the dog into the stroller, the dog is always going to think it's going to get the stroller. So therefore, the dog is going to refuse to walk. So I'm actually in agreement with you, Samter. I think it's laziness from the owner. Now, children on a leash, that always creeps me out as well. And if you can't control your kid and walk with your kid, and you have to put a leash on your kid, that's a problem. That's a parenting problem. I think parenting is the issue here, where as long as physically there's no issues, if you can't teach your kid how to somewhat behave, and I get it, everyone's had their temper tantrums, I had them as a kid, but my parents would never put a leash on me and say, Zach, we can't control you, so we're going to put a leash on you. And it looks so stupid, too. And guess what? If it's just because it's two or three kids, okay, like, who was the Octomom? Remember her? Like, if you have eight kids, all right, maybe then you need a leash to get everyone to walk together if you're just one person. But one kid on a leash, I've never got that. And the dog in a stroller drives me bonkers. I just think it's just so stupid. It's so snobby. And it is lazy. Really, really lazy.
Now, the only exception that I have personally about kid on leash is,
do you
like,
put your kid on a leash?
No. Well, I mean, she just started walking. She's not walking outside yet. She's like, you know, we go to a park. But yeah, so she's not at that point yet. But soon, in the next 6 months, she's going to be running all over the place. But no, she will not go on a leash.
Good.
The only exception for kid on a leash is, I think, like Disneyland, Disney World, something like that, where you're in like a place that's so crowded and so crazy that you just have to kind of have like a secondary safety thing. That's the only exception. I think that's even acceptable. I still wouldn't do it.
This is really going to be a hot take, and I think this could upset someone.
Uh-oh.
If you have to walk around in Disneyland and you could only control your kid if the kid is on a leash?
No, it's not even about controlling your kid. It's about there's so many other people around, something dangerous could happen. It's
once
not about
again,
your kid. It's about other stuff around them. Disneyland, to me, I wouldn't do it personally,
hold your
but
kid,
I
then
can see myself accepting
hold
it.
Your kid's hand then. You don't need a leash.
Well, first of all, okay, now I'm short, I'm, you know, low to the ground, so holding my kid's hand is not a problem.
That's not difficult for you.
But for you, at 6 foot, what, three?
6 foot four.
Having to walk around for 10 hours at Disneyland, leaning over to hold your kid's hand.
Tough luck.
Yeah, no. Tough luck. Again, I would understand. Again, for me, I wouldn't do it, but I wouldn't begrudge a parent who did it at a place like Disneyland or Disney World that was so busy.
No.
Any other place,
what?
You can't have the
My
leash.
Father lost me twice in a public area. I wasn't on a leash. I was found. Nothing happened.
Well, my dad, were lucky you were found.
My dad, we were skiing, and he followed the wrong kid down the mountain.
Oh, my God.
That was one. And then there was, like, it was an Adventureland kind of place in Florida called Boomers. And my dad was playing one of the games, and I guess a young Zach Gelb wandered away, and I wandered away to a stranger. But once again, that doesn't mean that I needed to be on a leash. Or that I needed to get, well, a stroller's different for a baby, but I didn't need a leash. It was my dad needed to be a better parent there and a little more attentive. All right?
Well, you're also
or not follow the wrong kid.
You're also on a ski slope. You know, like if you had a leash on a ski slope, that'd be a whole other story.
But still,
that would be very
follow
funny.
The right kid. Know your kid. Maybe he was trying to lose me. I don't blame him, honestly. I was a pain in the ass as like a 3 or 4 year old or whatever I was at then.
I don't blame Pops there either.
Yeah, but come on.
Listen, I spent a couple days with you in Arizona this last week.
Oh, please.
I was trying to lose you every second of the day.
I am the easiest person to go on a road trip with. I am not a high maintenance person. I like to eat good food, like to have a few drinks, have a fun time. I am very, 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 very easy to road trip
with. We did eat good food.
We did. That pizza was great.
Yeah. Also, I was watching some review videos of that pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Not very good scores. I was very disappointed.
Really?
Yeah.
So what was the name of the place again?
Pizzeria Bianco.
Pizzeria Bianco.
There was a documentary on Netflix that was done about pizzas, and Pizzeria Bianco was like, this is the best pizza in the world type of
Well,
place.
No, it's not the best
It's called
the best
Neapolitan pizza.
Yeah. What's going on now? Do we have to put you in a leash so your phone doesn't ring during the show?
No, not on a leash, just like maybe a choker or something.
Jeez, that does not sound right. That doesn't sound right whatsoever. Another thing that's not going to happen on this show. Anyway, I thought the pizza was like an 8.8. I thought it was really solid pizza. It was a great oven. It was well done. It was tasty. Good toppings. I would say overall, for the three pizzas we had out there, 8.8. And that's a pretty high score. I would go back, and I would not think twice about it, but the wait could be a little bit long, and thankfully we were able to get in and only have to wait 20 minutes. Anyway, so John Calipari's first comments were walking his dog, and the dog was in a stroller. I did not have that on my bingo card. But we get to Kentucky's next head coach, and here are the odds. Nate Oates at plus 350, Scott Drew at plus 450, Bruce Pearl at plus 600, Billy Donovan at plus 625, Danny Hurley at plus 650, T.J. Otzelberger at Iowa State is at plus 800, Rick Pitino at plus 1100, and Jay Wright at plus 1200. The first two phone calls should easily, and I mean easily, be to Jay Wright and Danny Hurley. But you got no chance to land either. I don't think Jay Wright is ever going to coach college basketball again. If he does in fact return, it's going to be to the NBA, and I don't even know if he'll ever go to the NBA. But Jay Wright clearly does not like the transfer portal, does not like name, image, and likeness, and he had it made for him at Villanova, where he won two national championships, turned Villanova into a blue blood, and then got to another Final Four in his final season and said, that's it for me. Jay Wright is enjoying television. You have to at least hear him say the word no, but you have to make the phone call even though you expect him to say no. And then once Jay Wright says no, Danny Hurley, the moment this national championship game comes to an end tonight and UConn wins once again, you got to place a phone call to him. Danny Hurley is going to use UConn, not that he needs to use UConn, or Connecticut, I mean, to get a better deal at UConn. There's a 0% chance that Danny Hurley is leaving UConn to go to Connecticut. You have to hear them both, though, say no. So then after that, I don't think Pitino is going. Pitino probably would want to go. I don't think, though, right now Kentucky's going to say, let's get a reunion with Rick Pitino. I don't think it's going to be TJ at Iowa State. I like Bruce Pearl, and Bruce Pearl has taken Auburn to a Final Four, but I would be surprised if it's Bruce Pearl, especially when Auburn just also lost to Yale in the first round of the tourney, and a big reason why Cal is leaving is because he felt like he was on the hot seat, and you remember Kentucky, recent memory, just lost to Oakland, and then also St. Peter's. So I'd be surprised if it was Bruce Pearl. I think when you look at the three most realistic names and three people that I would have to imagine would be somewhat interested and that they are in striking distance for Kentucky. Because remember, this is like Alabama football being open. I know Alabama had a lot more recent success and they were the creme de la creme team of the sport for all those years. But this is a blue blood. This is a prime real estate job in college basketball. And you look at the buyouts, the three names that I zero in on are Nate Oates, Scott Drew, and Billy Donovan. Now, Billy Donovan doesn't have a buyout because he's coaching in the pros. I would think Billy Donovan, with his ties to Kentucky back in the late 80s and the early 90s, would consider it. But there's a reason why he hasn't coached college basketball in a while, right? That was the dude in college basketball for what he did at Florida. And then he elected to go to the NBA, coach the Thunder. And then once the Thunder and that job did come to an end, right away, he was to the Bulls. I'm going to guess that he stays in professional hoops. If there was one college job, though, that he would consider to leave the NBA, it would be Kentucky. Personally, if I was Billy Donovan, I'd rather be the coach of Kentucky than the coach of the Chicago Bulls right now. But I don't think that's how Billy Donovan is going to view it. So then you have Nate Oates and you have Scott Drew. The Scott Drew buyout is $4.5 million. The Nate Oates buyout is $18 million. Nate Oates just took Alabama to a Final Four. Nate Oates had success at Buffalo. Nate Oates has now had success at Alabama. And it would add to the drama of another SEC coach leaving one SEC school to go to the next. I don't understand why people are saying $18 million is too much to buy out Nate Oates at Alabama and then also give him a ridiculous contract to be the coach of Kentucky. We're talking about Kentucky basketball. Like Arkansas, through the Tyson Chicken, through the co-owner of the Broncos, who's on the Walmart team, obviously, Jerry Jones, like they were able to find the money to get John Calipari to Arkansas. I know they didn't have to pay a buyout, but they were able to find that money. So why wouldn't Kentucky, with their resources and their background, not be able to get a booster or a few boosters to afford the $18 million buyout? And remember, you don't have to pay Cal $34 million to not coach the team and to buy him out. So I think $18 million is attainable for Nate Oates. But if money does get a factor here, Scott Drew is probably the guy that they're going to hire, is my opinion. And let me be clear here, because sometimes in SEC country, people react to things that just is unwarranted. Like the A&M fan in football, when they freaked out over Mark Stoops potentially being their head coach and then ended up being Mike Elko. Like, look what Mark Stoops did at Kentucky for football. Why would you freak out about him getting the Kentucky coach and being the Kentucky coach? But let's remember, right? Mark Stoops doesn't have a national championship, right? Never made the college football playoff, never won the SEC, but it's never expected of him. If there is a similar reaction by the Kentucky fan to the hire of Scott Drew, I would be dumbfounded by that. Scott Drew won a national championship at Baylor. Think about that. So why couldn't he win with the resources at Kentucky? I think Scott Drew would be a home run hire. And when I look at the names of Billy Donovan, Scott Drew, and Nate Oates, and I'm a huge Nate Oates fan, but I would rather have Scott Drew over Nate Oates, and it's going to cost you less to buy him out. Scott Drew is a proven national championship winner. And there's reasons why he's not left Baylor, but if he's ever going to leave Baylor, it's time for a prime real estate job like this. So when we go through the names, Wright and Hurley will say no, you got to ask. And then after that, you got to get one out of the three of these three names. Billy Donovan, Scott Drew, or Nate Oates. And ultimately, I think it's going to be Scott Drew. But what say you, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. We'll take a break on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we do return tonight, it's UConn up against Purdue. Who's going to win it all? Who's going to win the national championship game? We'll discuss when we return in five.
This is Matt Spiegel, and we are off and running with Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. Hear guests like Joe Davis explain the thought process during baseball's biggest games.
You got to widen the lens. What does this home run mean?
Harper, the swing of his life!
Incredible broadcasters sharing great stories from your favorite teams with new episodes weekly. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.
All righty, the road ends here for men's college basketball tonight with the national championship game in Phoenix, Arizona, as you do have the two best teams in college basketball going up against one another this evening. It doesn't always happen that way. Remember last year we had UConn up against the surprise story of San Diego State. But tonight you have the UConn Huskies going up against the Purdue Boilermakers, and you have the big matchup of the big fellas of Donovan Klingon, Kling Kong, going up against Zach Edey of Purdue, who is the back-to-back national player of the year in college basketball. UConn's going to win the game. I would be surprised if we're sitting here tomorrow, nothing against Matt Painter, nothing against Purdue and Zach Edey, but I would be surprised if Purdue takes care of UConn tonight. UConn has really not even been tested this tournament, and I still think they could play to a different level and at a different level. And everyone was wondering, right, when we were in Phoenix, Arizona, what happens if UConn gets into a tight game? Because all these games in the NCAA tournament, Stetson, Northwestern, San Diego State, Illinois, it's been a walk in the park for them. Well, that game against Alabama, it felt like Alabama was starting to get in the game. They were starting to have momentum shift their way. UConn was in a little bit of a drought. And then instantly, I think it was like an 8-0 run or something like that. And once UConn was able to pull away like that, you said, okay, nice little test. Basically what Alabama did was they put the smelling salts underneath the nose of the UConn Huskies, and then boom, they were alerted. They realized, okay, this game's a little bit tighter than what it needs to be, and then they pulled away. I will not bet against UConn tonight. I already laid the 6.5 points. I would be surprised. Like, I don't think this game's going to be a blowout. I think at moments in the game, you'll say, okay, UConn is not playing to their level. Purdue, maybe they're going to be in here for an upset, and maybe they're going to be able to pull it off. But as you get into the final 6 or 7 minutes, I do believe that that is where UConn is going to pull away. I think it's going to be a UConn victory. I think UConn's going to cover the 6.5 points on the spread, but I don't think this is going to be like an embarrassing performance where Purdue loses the game by 15 or 20 points. I'll take the Huskies by less than 10 points tonight, but I do think they're going to cover the number of 6.5 on the spread. So that's how I kind of think this is going to play out. I do wonder, though, what the conversation will be tomorrow about Purdue. Because I have UConn winning tonight 81-73. That's a score that I'll go with, 81-73 over Purdue. But for Purdue, we all know what happened to them a year ago. They lost to Tobin Anderson and Fairleigh Dickinson, who was a 16 seed, and Purdue was the number one seed. We know the last time that happened, which was the first time, you had UMBC get the best of Tony Bennett's squad in that 1-16 game, and then the following year, Virginia ended up going to the Final Four, ended up winning the national championship. I think Purdue, once they punched their ticket to the Final Four, they were able to exhale. I believe that they got universal praise. But if they would have lost to NC State, I do think we would have criticized Purdue today. And we would have said, coming off those games on Saturday night, yeah, Purdue got to a Final Four. It wasn't an embarrassing tournament performance, but you leave with a bitter taste in your mouth. I don't think, outside of just getting pants tonight and absolutely blown out, I don't think we look at this Purdue season tomorrow as unsuccessful and that Purdue didn't right the wrong from a year ago. This UConn team is just a different force. They're a different animal. And it's crazy how they were able to quickly retool with some of the pieces that they lost. And not only retool, but play at a better level. And play at a more dominant level. And I said this, I thought the best thing to happen to UConn was back in late February when they lost to Creighton. Because there were some early losses early on in the season where they lost two games. But picking up that third loss when they were on like a 16 or 17 game win streak, whatever it was great for Danny Hurley because it allowed them to kind of refocus and reset. And sometimes when you are that team and you're the team to beat and you have one of these just enormous win streaks, it's can you be victorious night in and night out? And sometimes when you lose a game, it takes some of the pressure off. And that's what I think happened to UConn. We know they won the Big East tournament this year, and they really haven't had, outside of the Alabama game, where it was a game for about 3 minutes, a game in this NCAA tournament where you seriously thought that they were going to lose. But here's what's on the line tonight. It's really two things. Number one, it's Danny Hurley officially becoming the face of the sport. You win back-to-back championships, and I like Danny Hurley, but he could be polarizing, right? He has an attitude, which is great, and I love Danny Hurley. But you could see like 50% of the people loving him, 50% of the people hating him. That's what you need for your face of the sport. You got to be a part of a huge program. We know UConn is a blue blood, and they win tonight. That's back-to-back national championship. So tonight, not only do you see the storyline of what I think is going to occur, that Danny Hurley is now officially the face of the sport for anyone that was doubting him, but then you also see the other side of it, either the storyline of one of the more dominant teams that we've ever seen, not the most dominant, but one of the more dominant teams that we've ever seen in college basketball, with how these games just have not been close, and everyone has expected them to win, and people are actually surprised if a team is ever within five of them for more than like a minute or two of the game. But if they end up losing, it is then the redemption story of Purdue. Those are the two storylines tonight. It's the dominance. It is the blue blood level that is UConn up against the revenge factor for Purdue to put the ultimate cherry on top of the revenge sundae. I think Purdue comes up short tonight. I like UConn to win the game. And it's just amazing what Danny Hurley's been able to do. And it's kind of crazy because we all know what Calhoun did at UConn. And Kevin Ollie did win a championship. And then we know that was a very ugly divorce. And now Kevin Ollie is the interim head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. But to see Danny Hurley get to UConn, and he called his shot. He said, you better get us now, because when this thing is rolling, when this thing is humming, you're not going to be able to compete with us. And it's one thing to say it, and it's another thing to follow through. And he did speak that into existence, where his team is on the verge of winning back-to-back national championships. And his family, I love his family. You know, the father, legendary high school basketball coach at St. Anthony's, and Bob Hurley Sr. I had a little bit of a relationship with when I was working in the Jersey area doing local radio years ago. And then you have, obviously, the brother who was a star at Duke, and we know what he's been able to do in college basketball. But to see what Danny's been able to do from coaching high school, then to Wagner, to Buffalo, right, all these stops that he's had, or excuse me, Rhode Island, not Buffalo. Bobby was at Buffalo. And to see those stops and now to be at UConn and to have UConn back rolling and UConn looking like the blue blood that they've been the last 25 to 30 years, it's just it's a wonderful story. It really is. So I like UConn tonight. Will anyone pick Purdue tonight? Stu, will you take Purdue?
I will not. I'll take UConn.
All righty. Samter, will you take Purdue?
I'm going to take Purdue.
Do you actually believe Purdue is going to win? Or are you just saying this to be different?
No, I have a feeling that we're going to see
Skip Bayless Samter here.
No, I don't. The expectation for UConn is so big. Eventually, they have to like falter a little bit. And Zach Edey is good enough. And that Purdue team is going to be the best team, I think, that UConn is going to face all year. And I think when it comes down to the crunch time, not that UConn can't win close games, but I think that Purdue's been a little bit more battle-tested. And in those moments where they're going to have to bear down at the very end of the game, I think Purdue's going to come through. It's going to be close, but I think Purdue takes it.
More importantly, when I was down at the shore a few weekends ago enjoying a few alcoholic beverages, I did place two future bets. And it was on Newton, and it was on Klingon to win the Final Four Outstanding Player at plus 1,000 and plus 1,100. So I'm rooting big for Kling Kong tonight, all right? And if it's not him, then I want it to be Tristan Newton as well. One of those two guys better win the most valuable player, but I think it's going to be Klingon. And, man, his athleticism is ridiculous. his defense, some of the blocks that he made the other night up against Alabama. But I really do think that this story about, if UConn gets into a close game, like they just got into a close game for about a little bit with Alabama, and then boom, they ran them right off the court and didn't even make that a close game towards the end. Richard Ackerman, who has called college basketball games before as a play-by-play voice, can you make the argument for Purdue to win the game tonight, or do you fully expect it's going to be UConn?
I can make the argument. Okay. I don't think it'll be right, but I can make the argument.
Go ahead.
That Zach Edey gets clinging into foul trouble and has his usual big game, as he has had tremendous tournaments, or tremendous tournament games this year, I should say. And the guards are hitting threes for Purdue, and UConn is struggling from three-point range. So that will be – I think they'd have to play a really good, near-perfect game, but it's possible. Does it happen? I don't think so.
And I think the player that's going to need to pop off for Purdue if they're going to win tonight, you know, outside of Edey, is going to be Braden Smith.
Yep, and no question.
And I give credit to Seth Greenberg, who was all over that storyline with his health factor, too, heading into the NCAA tournament, why he was more Purdue than Purdue heading into March Madness. But tonight I'm not going with Purdue. I'm taking UConn. I just can't pick against them. And I said this, right, 2 months ago. Until someone really beats UConn when it matters, I'm going to fully expect them to repeat, and that's what I think happens tonight. All right, we'll come on back. We'll update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio with the news brief. But first up with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, let's get to the Ackman Rich Ackerman.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, let's start with Caitlin Clark. As her illustrious college basketball career does come to a close, she did lose the national championship yesterday, but she looks back on another incredible season for the Iowa Hawkeyes.
Yeah, it's certainly been a special year. And to be honest, like after last year, I was kind of like, well, how do we top doing what we did last year? And somehow, some way, every single person in our locker room believed, and to be honest, this year was probably more special than last year.
Yeah, last year was the appetizer. It was a really strong appetizer. Kind of said okay to your palate, like, this is pretty damn good. And then this year, you just got like a sensational main course. Because there was an awareness, there was a lot of attention last year, but then it went through the roof this year with not only Caitlin Clark, but also the entirety of college basketball on the women's front, with the South Carolina story being undefeated, with LSU trying to go back-to-back with Angel Reese and Kim Mulkey. You had the emergence of, obviously, Juju Watkins going to USC, and then you had the return of Paige Becker. So women's basketball is in a very healthy spot. You could argue that maybe this is lightning in the bottle, but I think because some of the stars that are there, there's going to be more attention being paid to women's basketball. I'm curious to see what the shift will be to the WNBA. But for someone like Caitlin Clark, she has this unique ability where she's the most powerful piece of this puzzle. She has the unique ability to make you want to watch a sport where, let's be real, most of us listening, most of us talking have not watched a ton of in the past, and there's other great storylines that we've talked about before, but I've never watched more women's college basketball than these last 2 years, and it's solely because of Caitlin Clark.
I agree with you 100%. I probably will watch more of the WNBA because of her, or the Big Three, whichever way she decides to go.
She's not going to the Big Three.
I'm just saying, even if she did for 1 year for $5 million. Anyway,
she's
let's not get
because
back into
it would limit the growth of the game. That's a big, like, that's what Debbie Antonelli was kind of saying about Dawn Staley. Like, could she coach the men's game? Absolutely. But I do think it would stunt the growth of the women's game because of her power. But go ahead.
So here's a question, though, and this might be, a bad hot take or something, but was I the only one who kind of thought that Iowa lost that game because of Caitlin Clark?
Yes.
Like?
Yes. She's by far and away their best player.
Yes. And she scored, 18 points in the first quarter?
Yes.
She was unstoppable.
She was gassed.
She was gassed. I get it. But, she needed to be
Superwoman.
She needed to be Superwoman. And maybe this is part of the GOAT conversation. Like, when Michael Jordan needs to be Superman, he's Superman. when Kobe or LeBron, when they need to be the Superman, they are the Superman.
You do understand, though, Michael Jordan had Scottie Pippen. LeBron James had Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. Caitlin Clark does not have another great teammate.
You're not wrong, but I thought in that championship game, her teammates played very well.
No.
There were a couple plays here or there where there wasn't, you know, but they were making plays. And the plays that I was watching after that first quarter, the only people making plays, now Caitlin Clark was making great passes to a lot of her
teammates.
And
a lot of times the passes were dropped or fumbled out of bounds. That's a problem.
A lot of the passes were not fumbled out of bounds. A lot of the passes were difficult plays that they caught and they made, and great layups, nice little like bump and run. There was a lot of plays.
Here's the disconnect on this.
They were hitting.
Here's really the disconnect on this conversation.
Yeah.
Here's the disconnect on this conversation. That the fact that she got that team to back-to-back championship games is remarkable.
I agree.
Because like if she was on UConn or if she was on South Carolina, both those games would never have been in striking distance. You know, Iowa obviously beat UConn, and then Iowa had the lead at the end of the first quarter. They went back and forth for a little bit, and then you saw South Carolina pull away. So I don't think Caitlin Clark played poorly whatsoever. I thought she played a really good game, but when you have to be Superwoman and you have to hit shot after shot after shot and you explode like that in the first quarter with 18 points, yeah, I don't think it's just natural for any human being to be able to withstand that with their legs, and she lost her legs. That's what it was. All right, let's go to Caitlin Clark on the growth of women's basketball.
Our games being nationally televised, I mean, we've played on Fox, NBC, CBS, ESPN. I mean, you just go down the list, and we've been on every national television, you know, channel, and I think that's been one of the biggest things that has helped us. And I think no matter what sport it is, give them the same opportunities, believe in them the same, invest in them the same, and things are really going to thrive.
Also, you know what I found myself doing today? And it shows you the star power of Caitlin Clark. I was looking when her projected WNBA team was actually coming to New York. And there was a few dates. There was one that I was away. I was going to be in Florida. And there was another, I think it was in early June, where I was like, okay, I could go to a Liberty game. I would never consider going to a Liberty game before this. I've never would even think about going to a WNBA game. It's just not something I would do. But it just shows you how an individual can draw you to a sport. And when she's in the New York area, absolutely. As long as my schedule's free, I would love to go see Caitlin Clark play basketball because you just know that there's something so special and it's such a unique thing that she brings to a basketball court. Let's go to Lane Johnson. So Lane Johnson and Jason Kelce made an appearance at WrestleMania. Was that I think it was Rey Mysterio who was wrestling? I didn't even... When I was a kid, Rey Mysterio was one of my favorite wrestlers. I know I'm not ancient, but I was surprised that Rey Mysterio is still wrestling.
49 years old.
He's only 49? That's it?
He turns 50 in December.
All right. Well, here is Lane Johnson on the Pat McAfee Show on his WrestleMania appearance.
Man, I lost probably 15 pounds, so trying to lose
Why?
The fluff. Because we had to take our shirts off, it would look better.
So you lost 15 pounds for Mania?
Yeah. Well,
thank you. You got Mania
That's
shape.
That's Mania, baby.
Well, I knew about it for 2 weeks, so I had 2 weeks to just kind of cut the cobs out and lose the QB jacket.
What'd you do immediately afterwards?
Oh, it was, yeah, I had a night last night.
Yeah. That you could.
I'm back on track.
Nah, that's funny. And when you're that big, like Lane Johnson, you could fluctuate with your weight. You could lose like 10 or 15 pounds and then gain it back and probably like two steak dinners. And I know Lane likes to drink a beer or two, let's just say. Here's the thing. I saw Maggie and Perloff and EJ all attended WrestleMania as a show. I loved wrestling as a kid. Like, I remember seeing in a WrestleMania JBL up against John Cena, you know, Batista, Rey Mysterio, The Undertaker, Randy Orton with the RKO. You know, I liked wrestling as a kid. And if you're still a big wrestling fan, more power to you. You could operate your life how you want. I just personally can't see myself going to WrestleMania. I couldn't. As someone that's about to turn 30 years old, and once again, I'm not ancient, I couldn't see myself going to WrestleMania And it was, I didn't realize, and I'm not like criticizing anyone, I didn't realize how big of a wrestling fan EJ and Maggie both were. Like, you could tell Perloff really didn't care about the WrestleMania. But I guess that's it's now two nights. I guess that's a fun thing to go to because I saw a lot of people go there. Samter, Stu, would you have any interest of going to WrestleMania? Just wondering.
Yeah, I'd go for the experience. Same reason why I've gone to like NASCAR races or like a Dave Matthews concert. I don't care about Dave Matthews or NASCAR, but like the experience.
Into me, yeah.
Yeah.
Into me.
Is that Francesco doing Dave Matthews?
Something Dave like Matthews.
That. The experience itself is probably worth it. So I would go not necessarily for the wrestling, but for the experience.
Okay. Stu?
Maybe if Hulk Hogan came back.
Now, Stu used to be like someone that hated soccer. That never had an interest in soccer.
Right.
And then started watching it. And he was like, wow, this is the greatest thing ever. And now Stu is like what the wrestling fan is and what WrestleMania is to them. That's Stu with every soccer match whenever they get on the pitch. Could you see yourself going to WrestleMania?
I could not. I probably wouldn't, but like you just said, maybe that could change. But yeah. I don't see it.
I was surprised how many people are. I know how popular WrestleMania is, but I was surprised how many people I knew that I would never think are still wrestling fans that were going there. So let's go to Merrill Hodge. We know he's been critical of Drake May. He was on WCCO with Henry Lake, and he ripped Drake May.
Drake May will get you fired. Drake May's the kind of player gets you fired. And especially you draft him in the top five, in the top three, he's going to get you fired. Malik Willis might be the only guy I could think of that is as erratic as Drake May. It is. I studied him for 2 years, and I am telling you, I have yet to find. Actually, I would say probably his best game. I watched every one of his games last year. It's probably the Pitt game. And that was an average football game. His last game, the NC State game, was the most embarrassing display I'd ever seen from a guy who's supposed to be an elite franchise quarterback. When you talk about accuracy, it is erratic everywhere.
I'm actually concerned because a lot of people think Jaden Daniels is going to be the second overall pick. A lot of people think my team's going to take Drake May at 3. And I know people could say, oh, it's Merrill Hodge. What does Merrill Hodge know? Just some old head talking into a microphone. Merrill Hodge nailed that Johnny Manziel wasn't going to be good. He also nailed that Jadeveon Clowney wasn't going to be worth the number one overall pick. There have been moments, not that he bats a 1,000, but there have been moments where Merrill Hodge has been in the minority talking about a player, and he ends up being spot on. I think I'm at the point, Samter. We're at 3, even though I would hate this. Jaden Daniels off the board. I think I want the Patriots to call up the Vikings or call up the Raiders or call up one of these teams that are desperate for a quarterback and just get a ton of picks. 3 first-round picks. I want Elliott Wolf to be on the receiving end of like Oprah Winfrey during Christmas time, where she's like, you get this, you get this, you get a first round pick, you get a first round pick, you get a first round pick. That's what I think I want to have happen here.
I mean, there's all this talk about the Vikings moving up to 4 with the Cardinals. If they have to like be forced to take JJ McCarthy and they can move up to 3 and get a guy that they want even more if it's Drake May. I mean, if I'm the Vikings, why not move up to 3 if I have to move up to 4 anyway?
Yeah, well, we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. Alrighty. That is a news brief. It is Zach Gelb show on CBS Sports Radio. Add Merrill Hodge to the Drake May hater list. And you know what? I value Merrill Hodge's opinion on this matter. Oh, boy. From now until the next 3 weeks, when we get to that NFL draft, I just think I'm going to be in like a... My brain's going to be in like a mental pretzel. Because one day I wake up, I'm like, all right, take a quarterback. The next day I'm like, trade back. Then it's like, all right, draft Marvin Harrison Jr. Ugh. This is going to put a number on your boy. It's going to do a number on your boy. I don't know how you guys that have bad football teams, they do this in the draft each and every year, Stu and Samter.
This is Matt Spiegel, and we are off and running with Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. Hear guests like Joe Davis explain the thought process during baseball's biggest games.
You gotta widen the lens. What does this home run mean?
Harper, the swing of his life!
Incredible broadcasters sharing great stories from your favorite teams with new episodes weekly. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.